Copernicus essentially used mathematical reasoning to demonstrate that the planets circled the sun. Galileo's reliance on experimental method can be seen as an extension of reason into the practical sphere. Aristotle would certainly have recognized both these as developments of the logic that he had invented. Aristotle had never intended his science to be static. He rightly saw it as a continuing process of investigation. Only the method was meant to be a permanent feature. If the Church had only distinguished Aristotle's method, reason, logic, categorization, from his findings, the conflict with science would never have arisen. Aristotle's scientific findings could then have been seen as a necessary limitation of his age, like his form of dress or his unavoidable pagan status. This is best illustrated by a conflict that didn't arise. Aristotle barely mentioned commercial practice, and thus the birth of merchant banking, which took place around this period, infringed no articles of faith, other than the Bible's edict on usury, which was cynically circumvented. Aristotle had made no pronouncements on double-entry bookkeeping or rates of interest on loans. As a result, the science of money was able to develop unhindered, to the immense profit of European civilization, and of course the bankers. But back to Summa Contra Gentiles. Having cleared the ground for reason, Aquinas now set about using it for a fundamental task, proving the existence of God. Nowadays, we tend to regard this as one of the things reason cannot be used to prove. The existence of God is self-evident to us, a matter of faith, or we consider the whole thing a fairy tale. No matter how compelling and reasonable the arguments, either for or against, these appear irrelevant. In other words, we now tend to consider that such things as the existence of God and the immortality of the soul fall into the realm of revelation. What is philosophically important is Aquinas's delineation of these two categories, reason, revelation, not his misapplication of them. As we have already seen, something remarkably similar to these categories still continues in modern philosophy, where Wittgenstein maintains, "Whereof one cannot speak, one must remain silent." Or, put another way, any ultimate truth, if there is such a thing, is so beyond proof that we cannot even talk about it. It is useful to adopt a similar attitude when considering Aquinas's actual proofs of the existence of God. What is interesting is not so much the conclusions as the arguments themselves, in other words, the form of such arguments. The literal-minded have every right to be suspicious at this point. Such an attitude can be highly dangerous. The form of argument used by a racist or a flat-earther may be superior to that adopted by us cosmopolitan globalists, though this doesn't make the conclusion of their argument any less preposterous.